Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to this. It is the Rugby Dungeon. Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. As always, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at JBeardmore, but this podcast is at the Rugby Dungeon. Anyway, I am delighted to be joined by England and Exeter prop Harry Williams. How are you, Harry?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, mate. Not too bad. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks, mate. Training today?
Yeah, we are training today. On Wednesday, we only do a half day, but we were like kept behind because I had to do like squad photo and that kind of thing. And then we did like get the getty images, pictures, you know, the headshots and all that kind of stuff. We got standing with your arms folded and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, I actually went to the sale equivalent last year when they have to do all their headshots and do the team photo. And they decided it'd be a good idea to do not only the team photo, but the team photo for Christmas in the blazing sun. So you've got all these lads getting ready for Christmas in the sun with their little Christmas hats on.
But what why were they putting that out? I don't understand. Why were they in Christmas hats?
Because...
Well, they sat in the picture of them in a squad all wearing Christmas hats.
Well, they were doing the squad photo, and instead of doing one at Christmas, they thought they'll do two squad photos in summer, and then they just made everyone wear Christmas hats. But I don't know why. You know, why stop there? Why not go for Easter, Ramadan? Why not do the whole lot?
But I don't know. I don't know what the. I don't think that's done. I don't think every team does. I've only ever heard that's the first example I've ever heard of.
It's
people
are
wearing Christmas hats. I don't see who would buy that picture. But you have to be pretty avid.
I guess it's for the website and.
Of course, yes.
For marketing. Yeah, exactly, for the programmes as well. Now, the first thing which stands out to me, Harry, is you don't sound like you're from Exeter.
No, I'm not from Exeter. I'm from London, actually, South London. Near up in Ord, it's like near Croydon. I went to school in Croydon.
Ah, so how on earth did you end up in Exeter then? What's your route into this fine club?
I finished school and I was involved with Wasps for like quite a few years, but only like quite the outer periphery, like academy sort of stuff. And then went to New Zealand when I first finished, just for like 7 months, which was a lot of fun. Then went to uni of Loughborough after that, and then. Went and signed for Jersey in the Championship and then signed for Exeter from there. So, a bit of a journeyman, actually, when I break it down.
Yeah. How old are you now?
I'm 26. 27 in a month, actually, which is
tell you
daunting.
What, you're at that frightening age now where you still feel young, but in 2 years' time, you're very, very old by rugby standards.
Do you reckon?
Oh, yeah, I think so. And this is just from my experience playing, which is I felt when I was 27. Yeah, still young. By the time I got to 29, 30, I thought, oh, my God, I'm now one of the eldest here.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
It happens.
I don't really like break it down. Like, what position did you play, though?
I play basically across back row, second row, that kind of thing.
Well, you're utility forward?
Utility forward. A bit of hooker.
All right.
Now and again.
Mobile loose said. No, I don't know. I think if you're a pro, you've probably got time on your side a little bit, haven't you?
So, oh, definitely.
But obviously, you know, I think when you turn 30, things probably do maybe go down a little bit. But I don't know. But it's way off now. It's way off yet, though. Jesus Christ.
Well, I mean, it's only two more pre-seasons, mate. Three more pre-seasons.
Yeah, that's a long time, though. Three more pre-seasons ago, I'd only just come to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think you're sort of like brushing over it a little bit too quickly there, but that's all right. It's well, hard. It will go quick.
Well, who's the oldest man in your squad? Is it Stevenson, probably?
I actually don't know. I think it might be Elvis Tyoni, but not really knows his age.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think it might be him or Gareth. Yeah, it was definitely Kai last year. I think he was like 36.
Yeah. Well,
but he works in the office now.
Oh, does he? Well, yeah, because he... He captained side last year, didn't he, for the LV Cup? Because I didn't actually realise he played the final, That might have been his last appearance for the first team. Yeah, full stop, actually.
For like, I think the Premiership it might have been, yeah. The final might have been.
I mean, that is quite an incredible thing.
Yeah, no, he had a really nice... I think, obviously I don't want to speak on Kai's behalf, but I think when you probably get a bit more senior and your last few games are like cup finals and wins and all that kind of stuff, it's probably quite a nice way to bow out of it rather than sort of... I think sometimes maybe the problem with professional sport is, especially when you either don't leave under your own steam or you leave, you know, like you start playing badly and then eventually you get dropped and you kind of just like fizzle out. I think it's quite nice to finish on like a couple of big performances and then you sort of can go out under your own steam a little bit.
Oh, completely agree there. What I quite like about Exeter is you've got a real mix there. I mean, you've got a lot of young lads coming through and I think they get all of the attention. And, you know, to be fair, rightly so. But, like, there are lads in your squad still. I mean, I talk about Gareth Steenson all the time. I don't think there'll ever be another player who will win the Championship and the Premiership with the same team.
Do you not reckon?
No, that's an amazing achievement when you think about it. So you've got to win the Championship with the same team and then spend a few years in the Premiership and then win that as well.
I think, yeah, it's actually, I've never really thought about it like that. It is quite, I suppose the only team that probably... you could potentially think about doing it, maybe Bristol, like down the line, if they had like a player similarly who'd just been in and around the squad for like so long.
Yeah.
But then to actually play, I suppose, like it's been a long time play. It's because we got promoted 8 years ago or 9 years ago.
Yeah.
That's a long time to sort of been playing so consistently and then for the team to come up as well consistently. It's, I never really thought about that, to be fair.
Yeah, and also it's another thing. I mean, it'd be one thing, wouldn't it, if he was like, I don't know, a winger or, you know, like a second row. You know, the club stalwart second row. But to be a fly half and do it as well is even more incredible, actually.
Oh, no, really. Why do you speak to Gareth, if you don't mind me asking?
Because I interviewed him for this.
Oh, right. Oh, okay, fair enough.
So, yeah. So the guys I've had on from Exeter are Tom Johnson. Did you play with him?
He was there for my first 2 years.
Corporate Chris, Gareth Steenson.
Was that Corporate Chris when he was working at Corporate, or was he still playing at the time?
No, it was Corporate Chris working at Corporate.
Yeah.
And Kai Horseman.
Was that when Kai Horseman was playing, of course, not when he...
Yes, it was Corporate. Last year or the year before.
I don't know. The thing about Corporate is do you think to be good at Corporate, do you think you can like develop skills you need to do it, or do you think some people are just born into it and just got like a natural propensity towards it?
Yeah, that's a good question, actually. I mean, I don't know. Corporate's interesting, right? Because a lot of it is, you know, all the bits that you see are the bits wearing the blazer, having a drink, and then entertaining, you know, the various tables who are there watching the game. I think the hard bit is like the day-to-day grind of actually having to report to the office, look smart, make your sales calls, try and get the guys interested. And also, you know, it must be weird for guys who have got name recognition among the fans and they're bought into Corporate because of their name recognition, but maybe when they phone up, you know, the local business, they don't know who this ex-player is. I think that would be illegal.
They need to phone up local business.
Oh, absolutely.
I actually didn't even realise that was even like a part of the job description. I thought you just kind of... I actually didn't really know what they did.
Yeah, absolutely.
I thought I just went along on Saturday and asked and did the Q&A stuff. And
well, I think there is the Q&A stuff when you're moving into it, but I think once you're full-time Corporate there, you know, you've actually got to get on the phone, talk to businesses and, you know, get them to fill up your stadium.
Yeah, we are. Because obviously you do this and you are kind of speaking to a lot of people, I suppose, on like a large scale, but it's not very personal, is it? Because you're actually fundamentally, you're just sort of speaking into a monitor or whatever. How are you actually speaking in front of like a room full of people, let's say like 600 people or something like that?
Oh, goodness me. I'd be terrified to speak in front of 600 people. I'd be absolutely terrified. How would I do it? I'd do it very, very badly, Harry.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, it'd be an absolute disaster. Mind you,
I don't know, really. I think it's... Do you know what I think the key is to be punchy. That's what I think. I think if you go anywhere too long, people just automatically lose interest unless you're, like, unbelievably gripping. I think if you go for longer than, like, 15 minutes to 20 minutes, then it's just, like, you know, you're finally losing battle. Like.
15 minutes talking, though, is a long, long time. When you say punchy, do you mean as in punchy with... you know, controversial opinions, or do you mean punchy as in...
I actually, do you know what? I think that when people are forcibly controversial for the sake of it, I think it's a little bit cringe. I think that what people appreciate is sincerity. So if you actually are, if you're just like a decent fellow, sort of, you know,
yeah,
punching in, punching out, one foot in front of the other, and he just, then you're showing that. I think people respect. If you're just kind of up there saying mad stuff to try and get some sort of reaction, then people kind of, people see through it a little bit, especially when you're laying, I suppose, like laying yourself bare in front of so many people, like talking in front of an audience.
Yeah. Well, let's try this then for a quick instant reaction. So you went from school, right? And you went straight over to New Zealand. Is that roughly right? Or were you Wasps then New Zealand?
No, I was at Wasps, and basically I played in, I played for Staines, who were at the time there, and that Freetown, they've fallen off now, but I'm not sure, they're in like one of the bottom leagues. But they, I basically played for them from August to January when I left. And they, I think they like part-funded my flights, and Wasps part-funded my flights. And then when I got over there, I was like settled with the team, and I lived in the flat above the changing rooms and the gym and stuff. And then like they let us stay there as long as we like cleaned up after the game on a Saturday and that kind of stuff. So it was good. It was real. Like it was very, there was no pressure. And I think when you're younger, that's what I sort of find quite, the reason why I was quite looking now, I'm a little bit older now. That was like 8 years ago or 7 years ago, is that when to have those experiences when you're young and you don't have the pressure of like a professional environment and you can kind of just do your own thing for a bit, I think it kind of stands you in good stead later down the line, because I really appreciate now any opportunity I get, really. And it's all, I don't, it's not something that I've been kind of like grinding on for years and years.
Yeah.
I used to say that I've been playing like full time now for this is my fifth season. But it's, I'm not sort of like bored of it at all. I'm like really like, I enjoy going in the training and I enjoy getting the opportunity. And I think that sometimes if you're in it from when you're like, because some players come into it ridiculously young. I just don't see how they couldn't eventually, like 12 years in, say, and they're only like not even 30, how they couldn't find it like a bit of a chore to just sort of like continually grind, because they've just been doing it. They haven't known anything different a little bit.
Do you still find it exciting?
Yeah, I still find it exciting. No player could ever say that they go to training every day and they're like absolutely buzzing for it and they're like excited to go and train when they've got like a hard day's grind. And sometimes you just got to kind of like chew through it.
Yeah.
But like the experiences of playing and sort of, I'm playing all these like different stadiums I've never been to and all that kind of stuff is in like, yeah, like unbelievably exciting.
Yeah, because I'm with you on this, which is I almost get a little bit upset when I meet the guys who are 12 years in and they're a little bit jaded by, for what a lot of rugby fans is like, you know, the dream of being able to play professional rugby. But actually, after 12 years, it's just a job.
Yeah, I think it is. And I think you probably just get like acclimatized to it and you don't, but it's as if you don't know anything, like, I suppose, outside of the environment a little bit. And that's not for anyone's father own. It's hard to, because it is very all-encompassing when you're, it's like any other job. It's hard. I've got the utmost respect for players who can do so much off the field to sort of like push themselves and bear themselves. Like, I don't do as much as I should. I don't actually know many players that do as much as they should, but like the few who do,
yeah,
it's like basically like having like another job on top of what you're already doing, which is already so intensive. That it is like it's definitely something. There are definitely people that should be sort of like admired, I suppose, by the other players around the league.
Yeah, I completely agree. Now, when you talk about people that do things outside of their other job, I guess you're referring to people like, you know, guy who springs to mind immediately, someone like James Haskell, who seems to be the busiest man on earth. His work ethic alone should be greatly, greatly admired.
I'd say so, but I think there's been like just generally, the sort of thing I find is weird is like the power of social media. So it's like the now companies or whatever, say you were trying to promote yourself, they wouldn't even consider you as like a potential candidate, I guess, if you weren't like, what I say, an influencer on social media, which is like quite frightening, I suppose, for the way that it's gone. Because now it's like people won't even be considered unless they have like how many followers and their web, I suppose, web of like influence is however big. So I don't actually think generally not just on a rugby thing, I don't actually think it's a good way for things to go. And I think eventually the situation will come to a bit of a head and people probably will get sick of like having to, your you know, everyone's lives like constantly mapped out on social media, and you know you're feeling like it's compulsory, like it's compulsory activity. You have to like put everything out there in order to get recognition.
Do you feel that pressure yourself?
Not really. I've only got Twitter, and I know I'm not actually on any other social media. Actually, I actually sort of, because I was like chatting to someone about it the other day, and I would actually say that surely if you weren't on anything, your stock would actually be rarer than someone who is putting out so much stuff, because you're not. Because the only way you could be reached, I suppose, would be like if they actually spoke to you in person, or if you went to an event. So surely, but then I just don't think it works like that. I just really don't think companies see it like that at all. They only see, no, we need to brand our, you know, we need to do this, we need to do that, so we need you to post this, this, and this, and we'll give you, you know, X, Y, and Z.
Do you know what? That is a phenomenal point. I've never actually thought of it like that. Like, the things that you say should be a resource which is scarce. And it makes a lot of sense, you know, if you want to hear someone.
I think you should be, and I think it probably would, if you were like, because there's sort of, I think that rugby, while it's growing, I think, quite a lot, that it's still so, like, compared to, like, massive sports, I suppose in this country you'd say, like, football and then all of, like, the American sports, like, they're, those fellas probably doesn't really, probably doesn't matter, and they can pretty much do what they want because those people don't need to work to get the coverage. Anyway, they literally, it will come to them because they're seen on such a massive scale.
Yeah, but
I think they're probably I don't think there's any rugby players that are anywhere near that level of notoriety, really.
Well, you make another good point, which is when you think about like true A-listers, like, you know, the guys at the top of their game, like Hollywood types, they don't have a huge social media presence. In fact, they hardly have any, because they don't want to be seen until they're ready to be seen, I guess. Well, I don't think a guy like Brad Pitt has a Twitter.
Yeah, it's true. Actually, he doesn't have anything. But then, I'd say it's like one of those like inverted U things. It's like you need it up to a point, and then after a while, you're just like, I don't want the ag of like having to like catalogue my life. I don't even need to, because if you were to like leave that, there are these people, if they leave the house, they're literally getting mobbed by people who want to speak to them and that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I've never thought of, you know, your opinions or, you know, your social media profile or lack of it as being a scarce resource, and it actually does make an awful lot of sense. Just a quick one. When you first started playing for Staines, then, what level was that?
That was National 3, so level...
National 3?
So level 5, yeah.
Wow. So straight from National 3, I mean, you know, it's still National Leagues. It's still a really good standard. That's one hell of a jump then to go into Jersey.
Seeing Jersey came quite a late, so I was playing for them. I played for Staines and I played for Loughborough for a couple of years. Then I was on loan at Nottingham. We were Championship. I played like all the leagues like incrementally as the years went on. I was sort of like went from Nat 3 and then Loughborough and Nat 2, and then we got promoted to Nat 1 and then Nottingham with the Championship. But I wasn't like, I definitely wasn't a starter in Nottingham. I could only go to about half the sessions because I had to go drive over there and then sort of go to my lectures and stuff like that. But then once I went to Jersey, I'd say I was more of a firm part of the squad. So that was kind of still like finding myself in the Championship and then obviously on to Exeter after that. And then at Exeter, it was like I think I was a little bit naive onto how things actually are. I think when you go into the Premiership environment, you are starting as like a bottom rung of the ladder, and it takes a long time or a lot of luck, which I actually fortunately got to work your way into a position to play, to even sort of keep your spot in the squad.
Why do you think you're lucky? I mean,
I think I'm lucky because my first year, I didn't play for the first half of the year, and then Murray and Franny both went off to the Six Nations, so it kind of freed up a spot on the bench, basically, because Alex Brown was also there at the time, and then he sort of went and played, and then I sort of got a spot off the bench and then had like a run of a few okay games, and then even then Murray came back and I sort of had to wait my turn again, but then Tom actually got banned for a few weeks, and it kind of just, it sort of like it's these sort of little things happen and you kind of find yourself in positions to play, but it's when I'd say that's the sort of the luck part, but then the part where you need to perform is that when you're given the opportunity is to basically keep your shirt.
Yeah, I think it's amazing that you think that you're lucky, but you know, when you put it like that, you know, clearly circumstances played a role. But
I think if you don't accept that when you initially go up, which is why I didn't really think you go in with this kind of like utopia, like, oh, I'll go in there and everyone will be given a fair crack, but it isn't really like that. When you are going to a top flight setup, the coaches need to know that you can be trusted, and to get the sort of the trust of the coaches, if it isn't foisted upon them where they sort of have to play, it takes a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, you know, when you think about the player saying that he was lucky to start and now you're involved with the England setup, it sounds very, very humbling when you say luck played a big part in it.
Sometimes it's better to be lucky than be good is actually like, I don't buy into it 100%, but I think you can fare your bet as well as you want, but the same applies at all levels. The same applies with coaches. So if you look at like someone like Alex Ferguson,
yeah,
he obviously put a lot of work into bringing in that sort of crop of young players when he initially came in. And then by the time they were all sort of, you know, at their peak, they had like an unbelievable team, the treble winning team. But you sort of think about the amount of like teams that have had good crops of players and they've either left or they haven't quite come through or they've got injured. The fortune plays a big part, I think, especially for coaches, for players, for everyone, really.
I do completely agree with that point. Going back to getting the coaches to trust you and stuff, you know, if you were to do it again at Exeter and you wanted to get a coach's trust, but you're at that bottom rung of the ladder, how would you go about doing that? I mean, what do you think coaches want from you?
I think what is good about Exeter the only other experience I have of any other team is, I suppose by the England stuff is what someone said, I wasn't really involved, is that I think you just got to, the role gives you the opportunity to show it in training, and the training is intense. So if you consistently show that you're sort of mucking in with the other players who they know are good, then you put yourself on their radar a little bit, and then it's just basically about biding your time, staying fit, staying healthy, and doing everything you can do.
Yeah.
Till you get in a position where they actually think, all right, well, we'll give this lad a shot.
Have you ever gone up to a coach and sort of bent his ear and said, look, I know I'm not in your considerations right now, but you know, give me a chance.
Bending a coach's ear, I think it only really goes so far, and you always see these like, I remember because I was actually quite when I sort of finished school and stuff, I was actually quite at odds with the whole England school setup and stuff like that, because you see these parents that are like county festivals and stuff actually bending the ears of these like county coaches who are, you know, fundamentally they're amateurs, they're not paid to be there, they're off their own free will.
Yeah.
And I think on those sorts of sets it does actually have an effect, but I think when you get older and the coach is just like they'll hear you out, but I don't think it has that much of an effect, really. So you're probably better to just let things play out and let things be the way they be. Because when I was younger and stuff, I used to get really annoyed and like really frustrated when I wasn't kind of in the running and stuff like that. And it's just all you kind of do, you just make yourself look petulant if you're just continually going on about it. I think you just got to, there comes a point where you just got to like get your head down and get on with it, really.
Yeah, I think that's something which you learn later on in life. I was exactly the same when I was younger, and probably still am a bit petulant now, truth be told. But yeah, you just need to knuckle down and, you know, carry on training or just carry on doing the thing which will get you noticed.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's just, that's probably what I would have said to myself. But I think that was certainly for the last few years, I feel like I have done that to the best of my ability.
Yeah, the reason I asked that actually, that question about, you know, have you ever bent a coach's ear, is because I have experienced a fair few coaches in the professional game when, you know, just talking around, and you get a an impression of certain players about certain coaches that that coach doesn't like being approached, or it's he's the big man in the club and you're only spoken to, so you only answer when spoken to, that kind of thing. And I think those guys sort of lose out because the player feedback just doesn't come back to them.
Do you reckon?
Definitely, definitely. I'll give you an example. I was present when a certain coach, and we sat down to have a meeting. The young player came in kind of by accident. And this guy's like 6'4", plays number 8, big lad. Coach looks up at him and goes, "Why are you here? Get out now." And all of a sudden, this lad goes from 6'4" to about 5'2", and he just looks like an absolute child. I thought, that is not a kid that is going to respond well or give that coach particularly good feedback.
Well, just, yeah, no, I suppose I think it's just, you probably shouldn't do that, I'd say.
Yeah, I think there's...
He's probably not sure that's not the best way to go about things.
Because the more that I, you know, delve into professional rugby, I think a lot of coaches can get to where they are. And Exeter, I don't believe, is one of these places at all.
But no, definitely not.
The coach is a bully. You know, the coach can sort of bully his way to the top. Rugby can reward that kind of personality.
Do you think it can? I don't know. I think that sort of stuff, like browbeating, and that's kind of, I think it is running its course a little bit, and like being more humanitarian and caring about the players goes a lot further. If you trust someone, you're always bound to get more out of them. If you're not, have you seen that thing on Netflix called Last Chance You?
yeah, absolutely.
I've seen that. It's quite well, the new season.
Yeah. The one Jason, not Jason Brown.
Yeah,
is it Jason Brown?
Yeah.
JB, Jason Brown.
Like, I just sort of, it's weird, but with that, I just sort of think, like, I don't know how one person could get so stressed about college football. It's quite like alarming, really. It's like it's just, and surely that can't be the best way to manage people. But then it's quite weird. So I watched an interview with Malik Henry, the quarterback, and apparently said that him and the coach have like a really good relationship. And they're in a position with each other where they get on well enough where they can just talk to each other how they want. So it doesn't matter. Sometimes they're like just cuss each other or whatever. But he says a lot of the time it's like them going over film or talking normally. So now I'm thinking he's been told to say that by his coach, or they've just edited it to make it look like they've got like this really bad relationship, which actually isn't the case.
I have no doubt that editing plays a massive part in all of this. But I tell you the bit about Malik Henry. And by the way, this is very, very niche if you haven't watched Last Chance of You. But it was almost heartbreaking, actually. Did you notice in the last episode when he's talking to his dad and his dad's friend and they're having a laugh and he's just got this dead look in his eyes? Like, if I don't make it in this sport, you know, all hell breaks loose. He just looked like a guy who is completely numb to all of the expectation. It was just sad. It was a really sad scene.
Yeah, I know, it's sort of, but then you wonder, like, what this, when I was watching the wild from, it was like, this kid clearly doesn't really care that much about it. And if you're basically, like, just, like, trying to thrash someone and tell them they have to do something and they fundamentally don't want to do it, then it's like, it's like flogging a dead horse. What's the point? And he's getting, because I thought that, because he spoke about baseball and his dad said, oh, he really liked playing baseball.
Yeah, so we stopped him doing that.
Yeah, but I was thinking, like, what's so wrong with actually playing baseball? Like, this kid likes pitching. Why don't you just let him pitch? Why does he have to play football? It was quite sort of weird. Like, the baseball player, if it's about money, surely baseball players earn a load of money too.
Well, not only that, there's also more jobs. You can play AA, AAA. You know, you don't have to play big league. You can go and play all sorts of baseball.
Little Beach.
Yeah.
You've seen that every year. Now, I felt... But they're saying he had a very sort of like nonchalant attitude.
Yeah.
To the whole setup. But it's just, I sort of got the impression it was like there was just no point in just like, but it was like the more he sort of like retracted and was just obviously not keen, it was more he kind of got pushed and pushed and pushed that he had to do this. And it was just sort of force thread down his throat a little bit.
I tell you another really telling point, right? And again, it was a little bit hard. The whole storyline is a little bit heart wrenching. But when Malik Henry, who is the quarterback, just filling in listeners who don't know this, and Jason Brown, who was the coach, says he's one of the smartest guys that we have. He's smarter than most of our coaches. And then he does what I consider to be a really good teammate thing, which is tries to help the other quarterbacks become better quarterbacks. And I thought it was really telling that the quarterback coach didn't want him to talk to the other quarterbacks. I mean, I thought that was unbelievable actually.
Yeah, that's actually a good point, because it was sort of like weird. It was like he said to them, oh, stop telling him you can't talk to the quarterback anymore. And it actually seemed like, because they brought in the third string guy, didn't they?
That's
the
second right, yeah.
string guy had like fluffed a couple of games, the third string guy for the big rivalry match. And he did seem like he was genuinely trying to like help him out. And they were like, no, you can't do it. But I think what that was about was just job validation, because the guy didn't want to be seen that he was like a sort of a redundant part of the machine, that he had value as well.
Yeah.
And if the player and the team's doing a better job than him at coaching the quarterbacks, then what's the point in him being there?
But
you can tell that fella, the quarterback coach, was under the pump anyway. He was constantly getting like, it was abuse. He was receiving yeah. from the head coach. It was literally abuse.
Yeah, and he was doing it for free. People forget that.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that. When he said that, I was like, Christ. Like, what is the... I suppose it's because he wants to go to one of the proper unis, doesn't he? And sort of
yeah.
colleges and coach there. But Jesus Christ, he looked like a pretty sorry existence from what the documentary showed.
Yeah, I thought, again, it was just a really sad storyline, because this guy is absolutely desperate. And he also just didn't get it. I mean, think about your situation at Exeter, for instance, right? If your coach can leave you alone because the senior players take care of all the lineouts, that is exactly what you should have done. That is you doing a great job.
Yeah,
I
think it was just he probably felt like a bit maybe insecure in himself, and he felt like he needed to be sort of like, it was just a weird. I didn't really understand. It was like Malik, who'd been shown in this pretty shoddy light for the whole thing, was actually seemed like he was trying to be a half decent bloke.
Yeah.
He was like, what can he do apart from to not get abused? I suppose the only thing he can do to not get abused is throw a lot of touchdown passes.
Yeah. But just think about that, you know, from your point of view. You know, if you're getting screwed in the scrum, say, yeah, you know, you probably want the advice of the old head or the guy who would be, you know, normally number one or some such thing, pulling aside and say, hey, look, just do this slightly differently or just do that slightly differently. It'd be bizarre if they weren't allowed to do that.
I think, but then I think there's like massive difference between like English sport and American sports, just huge. And I think that was like a little microcosm basically of the whole system. Because you know the lad who has just gone over, Christian, who's just gone over to play.
Oh, Christian Scotland Williamson.
Steelers.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I went to uni, and we're pretty close, and I saw him when he was back in London, and we're sort of chatting to him, and just I was actually pretty interested in just asking about like what the difference is in that, and he just said it's like, yeah, it's like unbelievably like ridiculously different. It's not,
yeah,
well, like the whole like there's you obviously got the fundamentals are probably the same, especially with the higher level professional stuff over here, but he just said their approach is just completely different.
Yeah, well, I mean, have you ever seen them warm up? I mean, that is completely foreign to anyone who plays rugby. They get them all in a big like grid, and you jump up and down on the spot. It still works, I'm sure. But like,
well, I think that's just the whole American thing, isn't it? It's like English. I mean, we've got our senses of irony are too highly tuned to do that kind of thing. Yeah. I couldn't stand in a circle and jump up and down and say I was going to kill someone, because I'd just be like, what am I doing? I'm like a complete tit.
Yeah.
Stood in the middle of this circle.
Yeah, and also American football, right? People don't realise this, but for rugby players, and they don't translate into it too well. Maybe rugby players translate into American footballers better than American footballers translate into rugby players. But have you ever had the chance to play rugby with an American football player? Because I have a few times, and they are dreadful at rugby. It just doesn't translate.
I think they teach the tackle area like completely differently.
Yeah, completely.
And they are actually quite different games. I think Christian's going really well, which obviously, you know, sort of it made everyone like, you know, anyone I know who knows him is like buzzing for him, when, you know, obviously really wants him to succeed.
Yeah.
I think that the fact that, because it's just they put their head on like the completely wrong side, because it's all about like hitting with a helmet or something like that, I think, rather than actually like tackling we would deem to be correct technique.
Yeah, well, yeah, the head's on the wrong side. What they say, is it cut through them and then and then grab cloth. So you're putting your head on the wrong side, and they say grab cloth, so they do say wrap the arms, but you never see any evidence of that during the game.
But no, there's nothing wrong with. But you don't need to wrap the arms, do you?
No, but they do try
and shoulder charge them, like.
But they do try and teach that. So when you're doing the fundamentals, it's like you hit on the wrong side, but then you've got to grab cloth, i.e., grab the jersey on the back allegedly, and then drive through. That's. But you know, you never see any evidence of that actually going down.
No, you don't actually.
Yeah.
So I actually don't watch loads of it. Like, one of my housemates watches a lot of American football, like the the quad screen or whatever, when it's on and it's sort of like,
what's it called, Red Zone? Asking, I'm not,
what is that, the quad, what's it called, quad box. They show all four games at once. Yeah, that's mad, actually. That's very good coverage, I must say.
It's eggs. I would love to watch rugby in a similar way, actually.
Would you?
Yeah, the only,
I don't know, yeah.
The only issue is with watching rugby like that, and actually to a certain degree American football, is you can tell an awful lot about a rugby game just by the sort of the natural feel of the momentum. And if you're not concentrating, if you're going between game to game to game, you don't get the feel.
But do you enjoy, do you find it exciting to watch rugby union?
Oh God, I love it. I mean, I literally, on a, it sounds so sad, doesn't it? But my favourite match of the weekend is that Friday night match of the Premiership. I absolutely love it. I'll be excited for that match from Thursday until when it comes on Friday. And it'll be a terrible game and it'll be hammering
whoever's
down.
Whoever's playing.
Yeah, I'll watch anyone. Yeah.
No, I actually must say there's a guilty pleasure of mine as well. Not a guilty pleasure, a pleasure, I suppose, is watching that Friday night match as well. I wouldn't say I get excited 24 hours previous, but I do definitely watching that.
Oh, it's just great. It's in the lights. BT Sport doing an amazing job. I think, and this sounds sycophantic, but any event which is commentated on by Nick Mullins, it automatically elevates it by another 20%. It's just a, you know, brilliant, brilliant coverage.
Which one is Nick Mullins? He's the guy with a real distinctive voice, isn't he?
Yeah. He's a real gentleman.
He's one of those guys I always like. I know his voice, but I couldn't put a face to the voice, so like I have no idea what he looks like.
You would have seen him around Exeter.
Like kind of a floating voice in the ether and just commentates on rugby.
Yeah, you'd have seen him at Exeter because he makes sure that he goes to whichever team he is commentating on that week. So if Sale are playing, he'll be at Sale for the press day that week and be trying to get bits and pieces. So you'll have definitely seen him around.
Yeah. Maybe if I saw him, I'd recognise him. But I literally can't because all the other sort of like people who comment, especially on the BT stuff, you know, don't you, like, facially dislike as soon as they're spoken, you put, I can't put a face to the name there.
Yeah, Flats, Bafes, whoever it is, you know immediately if they're the ex-pros. You don't necessarily know who Alistair Eakin is or Nick Mullins unless you listen to the voices.
Yeah. Do they have a podcast or anything like that?
Nick's been on mine. Alistair doesn't. But yeah, Nick's done a few, but no, actually, I tell a lie. They have the BT Sport podcast, and they do that.
Yeah,
but
some platform that, fair play.
Yeah,
how did you start sort of your one? How did you build it and that kind of thing? Like get it from the ground running.
So going back to BT Sport, there was a guy called Tim Cocker who we spoke about, didn't we, just prior to doing this.
Yeah,
and Tim is a professional radio host. I was going to call him DJ, but I think once you get past 30 and you're called a DJ, it gets a bit sad. So he's now a presenter, right? And he worked at XFM in Manchester, which is like an indie station. And
yeah.
I listened.
Oh, on XFM, yeah.
So I used to watch a lot of NFL, loads of it. And what you find is if you want to watch a sport, but you're not in that natural sport market. The best place to get your information is online or on podcasts. So I started listening to a lot of NFL podcasts, at which point I thought, well, no one's doing this for rugby. Asked Tim about it. We did one. It was terrible. We did about a year's worth then, and they were pretty average. And then about after 2 years or 3 years, we started getting relatively good at it, and then I set up this one separate to Egg Chasers. But yeah,
why were they terrible? What's altered? Was it because you were unprepared, or
it's hard?
Did it not flow, or what?
It just doesn't flow. I mean, there are all sorts of different reasons why, but you know, interviewing can be quite difficult sometimes. Just talking, I mean, getting that flow with Tim and my other co-host Phil, that can be difficult at times, but you just need practice. You need practice over and over again. And people, you know, it's little things. Like, do you know when you, have you ever been on radio? Well, I know you have, actually, because I've listened to your Exeter podcast, which you did a few years ago.
Oh, yeah.
But like, it's little things, isn't it? Like, you can hear your voice in your earphones and just weird things put you off.
Yeah, well, that kind of stuff. Yeah, no, but I was sort of, the thing that I find, because I don't, if you're with, say, someone that you got on real well with, or you had a couple of mates you got on real well with, and you just sort of spoke to a microphone, I don't. It's sort of thinking, oh, well, it can't really go far wrong. So we'll just speak about stuff we know and that kind of stuff. But I'm wondering how, if you need someone who directs the conversation a little bit, because you could just end up talking about absolute nonsense.
Exactly.
And
right.
What you find it might really entertaining. Other people might listen and just be like, what on earth are these idiots talking about?
Yeah, well, I'm very, very fortunate because Tim is a very, very good professional presenter. So whenever we, you know, go off on a tangent about Last Chance U for 15 minutes, Tim will bring us back to doing whatever. So yeah, that's basically why you get better at it. But you know, being a really good presenter is hard, and that's why the guys who are really good get paid as much as they do, because loads of people want to do it, but not many people can.
Yeah, but the thing, it's weird though. But when I actually listen to podcasts, I'm probably the only. I listen to a few a little bit, but the main one that I listen to, especially when I'm driving, is the Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
And my favourite ones that he does are the ones that he does with Joey Diaz, because he's just like talking about like, and it's just, I just find it like, I'm literally belly laughing, the car finding hilarious. With the one, and sometimes the ones that I don't like so much is when he brings like these people on who are like experts in their field, and it's just like kind of like, it's a one track road, and they're just talking about like, you know, whatever it is. I actually prefer the ones where he's sort of just like, you know, so, but then it wouldn't be up everyone's list if you want to listen to something for a specific reason, whereas these two are just like, oh, clearly they get on really well, and they're just talking about whatever comes to mind. Like.
Yeah, do you know what I think the problem is with that? I think the problem is you've got two guys there who have got between them something like, I mean, Joe Rogan's got something like 30 years worth of stage experience and acting experience. You know, there are not many people who are more naturally prepared to do what he does than him. And then you've got someone like Joey Diaz, you know, again, got something like 20 years worth of stand-up experience, naturally, professionally funny. And the problem with it is that when you hear that, you think, oh, I can do that, no problem. I think hundreds and hundreds of people, thousands of people even now, up in, all around the world are thinking, yeah, I can do that. And the reality of it is what they do is so good because they've got so much experience doing it.
Do you reckon?
Oh,
science and art, don't you too? So, maybe equal parts science and art. I don't know, really.
Sorry, Harry, you've just gone a bit muffled there.
Sorry, I said, maybe more science than art, then.
Yeah.
Maybe equal parts science and art. I don't really, not too sure. Art being just off the cuff, like, maybe they're actually just, it's more considered than you think, maybe.
Tell me this, what happened to your podcast? Because you did do one, didn't you? I can't remember.
I don't know. Well, we did do it kind of, in the, 2 years ago, we were doing it, like, we were sort of banging it every week.
Yeah.
For a while. And then last year kind of just fell off a little bit, and we just weren't doing it as much. We haven't done for a good while, actually. I'm not really too sure. Mark, the fella who does it, is actually keeps it up and is keen to do it.
You should do your own.
I'm not too sure. I think our, you know, maybe the sort of, you know, the incredibly low listen incredibly small amount of listens maybe put us off a time. We thought it was gonna blow up a little bit.
This is gonna go viral.
200 average listens, and then when Jack Noel comes on and gets 1,000 listeners, we're a bit like, what more have we got to do? We're giving these people goal every week, and we're getting absolutely nothing.
Exactly.
In return.
What do these people want?
I don't know. I was putting my heart, I was laying myself bare for the whole of, you know, East Devon to see, and, you know, Noel goes on there and talks about the Lions and gets 5 times our amount of listens. You know, put any man off.
And unbelievable. Well, try and put it straight on Facebook Live, or try and put it straight onto YouTube.
What, put the podcast on YouTube? I don't think it did much better, mate, on YouTube. I think this year we might give it another crack.
Definitely.
But I just think we'd have to. But it's weird though, because I think sometimes it can be a little bit restricting, only because you're fairly limited to what you can speak about.
Yeah.
And I think we had some real good ones. But sometimes we got.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Is when you can go on like little tangents and stuff like that, but you can't really if you're doing a podcast for such a specific reason.
Yeah, exactly. If you're doing the sport,
maybe that's what kind of sometimes me and Alec maybe when we stand a little bit like,
yeah,
I don't know what's the right word. Not quite maybe.
I do know what you mean, because you know if you're doing it under the brand of Exeter Chiefs, say, and you know you've got sponsors and all the rest of it, you can't really deviate too much from what you know from what you should be talking about. You know, you couldn't say anything controversial about anything like that. You just can't do that.
Yeah, but I wouldn't say anything controversial about any of that kind of stuff. But anyway,
not controversial, but you probably just wouldn't touch it with a barge pole. And actually, yeah, you know, why would you?
I think it is hard. I think that when you're a professional athlete, you represent the company that you work for.
Yeah.
So you can't really. Even if you wanted to say something, you can't say it, and that's just the way it is. Which is why probably players would find their voice a lot more after they retire, because they're not actually with holding to speak in a particular way. They kind of say what they want a little bit, and they might not do because they don't want to be seen as like a dick around the players around the league. The players they probably want to work with, but you know that's the only thing that would really stop them. You can pretty much say what you want when you retire, because no one's going to tell you otherwise.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, right? So have you ever been in a situation, right, where a player, because I don't believe this for a second, for the record, but have you ever been in a situation where a player has spoken to the press and said something and you as a team or a unit have felt let down? Because I don't think that's a real thing. I just think teams do it because they can't be bothered with the blowback, or you know there is one message and that's it, and all the boys have got to stick to the message. I don't believe it affects the team one bit if you decide to say something, or if someone else decides to say something. I just don't see it.
No, I think that. So I think you've got to have freedom of speech, but I think you make the choice to not sort of go outside. You want to be seen. You do want to be seen as a unit. And if you're told, or if you're sort of said, look, this is how we want to be seen. I think a lot of players, yeah, they probably can't be asked with the fallout of saying something controversial, or it's just not in them really. Like, I personally wouldn't ever want to say anything controversial, because I don't want the ag really. I don't think anyone really wants the ag, because you are inviting so much potential trouble onto yourself, and you know who really wants that?
Yeah, but I guess it's more the point that you know teams make a big deal about, oh yeah, he let down the team, or you know this is going to leave a bad impression or such. I just don't think that's really a thing. I almost think it's people making jobs up for themselves in media roles.
I think it comes a little bit. I think that the thing is, it's weird. Everyone's pretty much in the sort of the whole media thing. Everyone is kind of out for themselves a little bit, aren't they? Like, the journalists don't, you know, they don't get cash for putting out stories that have no punchline or anything interesting in them. You know, say, oh,
nothing happened today.
Exeter Chiefs players trained this morning and went quite well. Like, that's not good. They are still trying to grab punchlines, and they don't really care about the players. So I must say that since I've the more senior I've got, I suppose, with playing and that, I do watch what I say more. Not, and it's not even that I say anything controversial in the first place, but I just watch what I say more, because you don't want to seem like a pillock, because the way the articles can be.
Oh, yeah.
The way the articles can be like, oh, you know, he said this, and you're like, oh, I did actually say that, but they didn't mean it like that, and that kind of thing. I think you need to check and double check what you say, because you just don't want to come across like an idiot. And some people don't care, like, they can have stuff written about it, it's just like water for dogs, but it kind of affects me a little bit. I don't want to be, you know, maybe it's like a narcissistic thing, but you don't want to be just considered as an idiot to people who read an article about you, you know?
Yeah. Well, actually, let's just go back a second, right? Because I mentioned before YouTube to you. Do you know, actually, the last time I watched you do anything, because obviously we've been in the off-season now, was on YouTube. Do you know what I was watching?
What were you watching, mate?
I was watching you getting interviewed by Josh from Love Island.
All right, the sport Bible thing, yeah.
Two worlds collide right there.
No, that was actually quite good. No, that was all right. It was sort of a bit, I don't know.
The
forced fun thing doesn't sit too well with me. I can't pretend to be having a good time, as well as some people are very good at it. And, you know, it's weird. So as the day wore on, I actually did start having more of a good time, but I don't really, someone gets a camera in your face, go, right now, start having fun. It's like, I find it very difficult. Some players don't find it quite as difficult, I don't think. And I just, but you know.
Turn phone up to 12, please.
Yeah, we need you to seriously start having fun right now.
Yeah,
you know, I find that a little bit difficult. But it was definitely a good afternoon. I think that it was. Where did they finish on the one? Fourth. No,
third. Third.
Meg and Wes finished fourth. They finished third.
Did they? Yeah. So hang on. Yeah, that's right. Third. I actually thought he came across quite well in the end. It was very clear.
No, I think he did. I think he is. I don't know how. To be fair, it was such a landslide victory. They got like 80% of the votes. That's ridiculous.
Yeah,
like, I can't. That is like because they got a lot. 79 or 80%. Everyone else got about 5% of the votes left, or like max like 8%. It's like, oh, Jesus Christ.
There was only one winner.
There was only one winner from day one. They literally had it won. Two weeks in, I reckon they had it won.
Completely agree. As much as I enjoyed this series, right, I did feel the last 2 weeks were so dull because there was nothing happening. You couldn't catch them
up. I stopped watching the final episode.
I did as well. I couldn't be bothered.
Like, this is just crap. Like, what's going on here?
Yeah. I've got to say as well, just going back to your sports Bible thing, there were times in that clip when your lack of love for forced fun, it came through.
Do you think it did?
Yeah. Once or twice.
What did I say at the beginning of this conversation, mate? People appreciate sincerity. People probably watch that and they think
it's brilliant.
At least he's being honest. People can see straight through everyone. Oh, you know, these like crocodile laughs that they're giving off and stuff like that. It's like, no one finds it that funny. Guy falls over and falls on his ass. You know, no one finds it that funny.
Yeah, wear studs.
I think it was. But then again, you know, he's sort of, you can't be running around in a pair of 21s, can you? When you're trying to sort of do one of these sort of lad Bible things.
Yeah.
I believe that. I'll tell you what was a better one. The better thing of that was when they asked us just the questions. It was just like going around asking us the questions, like, what do we think's the toughest sport, or who was a sporting hero when young? Those, I think that was the better part of the two bit series there.
Well, what is tougher than propping? Because I can't think
long
of
distance cycling. And I said it then, and I'll say it again. Long distance cycling, hardest sport in the world. There's no question. And they asked me to reconsider my answer. And I said to him, I reconsidered it, and it's the hardest sport in the world. I don't see how anyone can dispute that.
That's interesting. Oh, it's different types of hardness, I guess. I mean...
No, mate.
Yes,
it is not.
Of course
it
is.
One type of hardness, and you're cycling for 45 minutes up a gradient of a hill, which you could barely... It's like cycling in glue. There's no hard. There's nothing hard. You've got to do that about 3 weeks in a row.
Yeah, but they
impossible.
Are... I do get it, right? And it is... It is quite astonishing what they do, but it's very hard in a very specific way. I mean, it's not hard like, you know, you won't get the adrenaline rush or the fear as you would, you know, walking into the UFC cage or scrummaging like you do in front of, you know, the Twickenham crowd. I mean, that'd be terrifying.
The octagon was actually my second answer, and I did actually, when they asked me to reconsider, I did briefly consider it maybe. I'm thinking the thing you'd have to get over would be... getting, I suppose, like kicked in the head and getting hospitalised, which is obviously quite hard, which is quite physical. But I think if you're that way inclined, I think with that sport, the more I watch it, then people who do it are at complete just nutcases, because you have to be.
Mm.
There's no other sport like that where not even boxing, I wouldn't say, where you can you are every time you go in there is, you know, you are putting yourself in seriously in harm's way, because you're going into a cage with another like killer, trained killer.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that's like quite a big mental hurdle to go over, but just as far as like physical toughness, it's got to be long distance cycling.
Long distance cycling is a tough one, but it kind of falls in the same thing as ultra marathons and those sorts of people.
I mean, it's just... like then those blokes are just having a laugh at it. They're just jogging for 3 days. Like, it's not
jogging
not
for 3 days.
Mean... you know, that's not, you know. To be fair, when we were in South Africa, they just finished a 100-kilometer run, and there were these people like walking around. They were in these like orange t-shirts to say they just finished it. It was in Durban. and they look so sore, bless them. I can't even tell you the chafe and their feet must have been. What shoes could you run into to run in that? I don't even know what shoes. Surely there's no shoe on earth that could withstand that.
Go barefoot. I mean, I think it is getting
run barefoot.
Yeah, I think it's getting to that stage. I tell you, when I think that running's gone too far, right? You might not have seen this, but I've seen it a few times because obviously, you know, there's lots of middle-aged people jogging around where I live. But when they start bleeding from the nipples, have you ever seen that?
I actually, to be fair, I was back in London this week and I was chatting to a lad who ran a marathon. He's like a friend of a friend, and he said that he did it. And he said it happens like if his nipple tape fell off. And he said it's like very cotton, and he was like, it was the worst bit of it all. Agony.
I don't know why I'd do it.
It's just standard.
I can't see the point. I tell you, the other differentiating point as well about sport. I think individual sport, you do have to be a bit of a psychopath to do it to a high level, because there's no one to rely on but you. Like, the drive that individual sports people have is just incredible. Incredible, actually. At least you've got your mates.
I always wonder, like, say someone wins, or like say Federer wins a tennis or whatever.
Yeah,
I wonder if it is like, because part of the thing about, you know, sort of a couple of years ago when we won the Premiership, it was like we won and you're sort of celebrating with your friends. It's not like you're celebrating with like someone who's trained you or someone who's been your like physio. You're like, obviously you celebrate with those people as well, but you are celebrating with people who were on the field with you, and you sort of share the, it's like shared sort of sense of accomplishment, isn't it? Whereas when you are individual, I wonder if that makes, I think if you are that more way inclined, it probably makes it sweeter rather than bit more bitter, because all eyes are on you rather than, you know, the team. So I think it's just the way which way you swing, really. Well, I think some people are just more attuned to it than others.
Yeah, because I find doing individuals, when I used to do it as like in school or something, nothing would make me more nervous than starting a race. Playing rugby, not an issue. Starting a race, because it's so lonely and there's only one place, well, there's nowhere to hide. You either win or you lose, and if you lose, you're going to be embarrassed. At least if you lose as a team, you know, there's 15 other blokes and you can have a laugh about it. Well, sorry, 14 other blokes and you can have a bit of a laugh. But on your own, it's,
it's just like,
going into a cage and getting knocked out.
But I suppose if you deem it to be the rewards that much greater, because I suppose the pressure's higher and that, so when you actually do come through, like, that was just... Yeah, but I always think maybe it's lonely at the top and lonely at the bottom like that, because you don't, when you come through, you're like, all right, well, that's it then.
Yeah.
But then, I suppose when Conor McGregor beat Nate Diaz and he had that massive after party and everyone was going mental and he was sort of on there throwing money in people's faces, I think maybe he felt quite good anyway.
I tell you what, that actually is one of the most impressive things I've seen, which is to get beaten by a man who's much bigger than you and then decide to take the second fight. I think that is an unbelievable mental fortitude and belief.
It was really, really, that was just ridiculous. Do you like UFC?
I used to watch it a lot. I've stopped watching it as much now, but I used to, yeah, I watch all sports. But yeah, I thought that Conor McGregor series of going up, what, two or three weights from where he was, losing, right? And you think, oh, well, okay, bigger man, so on and so forth, learn his lesson, come back down. No. I'm going to go back to that weight. I'm going to go back and fight the same guy who beat me by, you know, distance.
If you listen to all his post-match stuff, I think he only... Obviously, Diaz beat him, but I think he saw him. He was the main factor of why he lost that fight, because he was so much bigger.
Yeah.
And he was just like throwing the kitchen sink in the first round. And the thing that both Diaz brothers have is they've just got ridiculous engines and they just won't stop. So when he started getting tired, and I don't think he thought he was going to get tired, and when he started like he was sort of getting a lot less active and he was throwing a lot less, and then Diaz just came through and just kept like tagging him. I think that's the way, I think that both the Diaz brothers, that's just the way they find, they're incredibly hard to break down.
Aren't they both quite into cycling?
Yeah, cycling, running. I think they're like
triathletes, aren't they?
Triathletes, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, they're like they've got actually quite like an interesting approach. So I watched some sort of stuff on Nick Diaz, although I really like Nick Diaz, and I like Nate as well, but I really like Nick. And they're sort of attitude of like never shaking hands with anyone, or never before the fight, never like touching gloves or anything like that. Their sort of approach to it is like, well, it's not a sport, it's like as close you're going to get, it's like fighting to the death, so why would you these people like come through and they like wish each other like really well and hug and stuff, like you're actually trying to kill this person, so how are you
going up and touching gloves with them. And at the end, I think they probably do it, but it's like they have a completely different attitude to the fight game, which a lot of people, when you see people like Wonder Boy Thompson, that kind of thing, who are like overly nice and they he seems very genuine, they just see it a completely different way.
Well, do you know, I think a lot of that is a release of tension, because all the build up is, you know, it's, do you know like when a room is experiencing a bad speech and then you get the nervous laugh and that kind of breaks up, you know, breaks up the tension, and then it's fine. I kind of think that's basically what's going on, which is they're just releasing the tension. They've built this up for so long. They've been camped for so long. And you see the guy across the ring, like, oh, yeah, good luck, mate, because we're in this together. They're the only two people in the world that know how that feels at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I suppose would be, to ever be able to have that, I suppose it would definitely be a cool experience, I think.
Do you think that there's any analogies here to playing front row? Because I always think that front row is the most individual position on the field in terms of your one-on-one battle.
Do you think it is? I'm not really too sure. I think it can be, but I don't think there isn't actually. Also, an umpire, I don't really try and get involved with the other player really or anything like that. Just do your own thing. Do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, no, I don't. I think it is, but not. It is in the sense that you are very up close and personal with the person you're playing against. But I think that, especially the higher up you get, the mechanic, like how well your scrum functions and how unified you are pushing together and stuff like that, plays like as much of a big part or a bigger part than the props in the front row.
You think it's more a function of process than it is one-on-one battles now?
I think that you have to be able to be in a good position and push the other person back. But I think that, like, it's as important having a decent scrum around you that wants to scrummage. That's as important as you being a half decent player.
Yeah. So, you know, basically, I always thought of propping in the sense of, like, yes, it is a team game, but if your scrum's going backwards, I mean, if your scrum's going forwards, they tend to say, "Oh, Exeter have got a great scrum." If you're going backwards, it's very rarely Exeter have got a bad scrum. It's, you know.
Or so-and-so's really struggling.
Oh, they're going to have to change that prop. It's never, we're going to have to change the second row, or they're going to have to change the engagement sequence.
No, that's a good point, actually, that really. It's never, unless it's like very, very individual ones where it's clearly one person doing all the damage, and they'll say, oh, he's causing them real trouble, yeah. I suppose in that sense, it is quite, especially when you feel like you're under the pump, and every time you're setting up and you're like, oh, Christ, here we go again.
Yeah.
But I think it's just, as time goes on, that kind of, when you're younger, I think that kind of stuff certainly got me down. But then when you get older, you just like got to be more stoic about it, and it's, you just got to think, you know, just chalk it up to one of them. It happens to everyone. There's no prop alive who has a perfect record. There's no rugby player alive who has a perfect record. Everyone at some point has been shoveled by someone else.
And it is interesting, actually. I love watching scrummaging. I mean, I really, really love watching scrums. But you do find that certain lads who are absolute dominant one week, it's almost like fighting. Like, it's more about the matchup than anything else.
I think it can be. But it's not. It's actually, it's quite a niche market, I don't think. I don't think that many people are actually that interested in it. Yeah. And they certainly don't tend to be pretty girls. They normally tend to be older, heavier men. So that's certainly from my experience has taught me anyway.
Well, if I've not said this a million times, I've basically said nothing. But in fact, I think Exeter did it. I think you might have. It was maybe the first scrum of the... Yeah, it was actually. First scrum of the final against Saracens. And the ball just sat in the tunnel for what felt like 5 minutes. I mean, it probably was like 20 seconds. But neither scrum could move. Neither hooker could lift up his foot. I thought, that is glorious. If we're not celebrating this as rugby fans, we shouldn't be watching this game. Go and watch rugby league. Go and watch football. But that's glorious.
Yeah.
I think it was you guys.
But I don't actually remember the scrumming questions before I watched it. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and here is the thing about rugby, okay, about rugby commentary, as kind as I've been to everyone so far. Do you ever watch rugby league?
Not really, no. Or maybe like, nah, I can't actually. Not like very few, like a smattering of games.
Okay, so just turn on any random game of rugby league. Think of the worst game you think of. Wakefield versus Salford circa 2007, right? Any game you want. And you listen to the commentary, and by 10 minutes in, you would be convinced that you are watching the greatest game of rugby league ever played because the commentators are so keen. I wish they would take that attitude, particularly...
More like sensationalist.
Yeah, but maybe they're just so into it. I mean, this is what I think, actually. I do think that the rugby league guys are so into it. They do believe that this is simply the best game they've ever seen since last time Wakefield played Salford. And I kind of think that maybe they should be more excited about things like scrummaging. And if you're a pundit, you should make it your business to go and, you know, learn about scrummaging and get excited about it every time. Because it's amazing.
I don't know, really. I mean, it's like the whole culture of rugby is not particularly, or rugby union is particularly sensationalist. I think it's more...
Oh.
It's kind of the whole stiff upper lick thing, isn't it? That's sort of, that's held like, as quite... It needs to be seen as so. I think they don't. No one wants to go like mental over anything. Really, they just sort of want to.
Yeah, but they mean
everything's just kind of steady away.
Yeah, maybe, but they good. But they go pretty mental over Johnny May, or you know.
Yeah, I suppose. So. I suppose.
Like Woodburn tearing down. I mean, what annoys me, right, is there is so much hyperbole about skills and, you know, wonder tries, this and the other. Skills is the one which gets me, because all we should do as rugby fans is lord what New Zealand do. Great. But what about the basics? What about the maul? What I mean, the line out is a fascinating battle. Scrums are and these are the little things that we should be championing and getting the neutrals interested in.
To be fair, I do think Dave Flatman does do that. So.
Oh, yeah. He really does.
Big up Dave Flatman for that. But you know, the other mental fans, maybe they need to like take a little look themselves. I'm not too sure.
Yeah. Now, I think when you say rugby culture is dominated by the printed press. And some of these guys are so miserable about the game. I mean, you would think they had the worst job on earth. They get paid to watch rugby and write about it. How good's that?
I think it is pretty sweet gig, to be fair. Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, so that's just my view. So we should do more of the rugby league stuff and just lord it continually.
Yeah. No, I'd have to agree with you there, mate. You know, of course, you are entitled to your view, freedom of speech and everything, as we previously mentioned.
Exactly. You involved in this round of England camps, Harry?
Well, I was involved in the one just gone at the beginning of August, and I'll find out. If I'm involved in the next one, which I think is in September. You find out closer to the time. They don't sort of tell you like, oh, you're going to be involved here, you're going to be involved here. You just wait till the squad gets announced, and you know,
do
and
you,
then you go.
Do you get a text, or do you hear about it from the Telegraph like everyone else?
We see it on the, well, for the Six Nations or the Autumns or whatever, you see on the screen the same time as everyone.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. You feeling confident?
I'm not too sure, really. I hope so. Like, yeah, I feel I need to play well in the next sort of series of games for a variety of reasons. I need to sort of just get back playing a string of games. Hopefully, get sort of my absolute tip top match fitness back, because I haven't actually started a game for anyone since January. So
is that right?
A real long time. Yeah. Because I was injured for. I started against Glasgow in January, and then I was on the bench for three Six Nations games, and I was on the bench for another one, and then I sort of another niggly injury, and that sort of brings us up to around about now. So I just want to focus on playing and hopefully nailing down a few a few appearances sort of at the start of the year, and then we'll go from there. You know.
Do you think the Exeter setup helps you? And what I mean by that is, when I think of Exeter, I don't really think of outstanding individuals. I think of an outstanding unit. So, you know, I always think that, like, the whole front row dovetails with the three guys on the bench better than any other team. Do you think that helps you, you know, when you're looking for further honours? Or, in a way, do you think that you just get lost within that team effort?
No, I don't. I think things are changing a little bit on that front for Exeter Chiefs, and I think that we do have more, as you would say, outstanding individuals we may have done in the past. But I think we sort of, the way the team gets assigned a culture, you kind of, it's very hard to change that. And people, like, there could be a game Exeter player and they could have 15 internationals on the field, but they'd still be seen as like the kind of decent unit who got promoted from the Championship. And I think that's just the way things are, because you get kind of typecast
yeah.
into a particular thing. But no, I don't. It's never the setup X has never helped. It's propelled me forward rather than helped me back. It's been, you know, it's been a massive benefit to me. I never. Because the thing is, I feel the reason why the bench and the starting front rows work well for Chiefs is because we've got decent depth, and when we train hard, so we improve. And I feel that's sort of why it works. And while we may come asunder like now and again, sort of in particular matchups, for the most part, we do well because in that department is because of how we train and also the depth we got across the board.
Yeah, I wonder if there's an element of it in Exeter. Because they use so much of their squad. I mean, you very rarely look at an Exeter team and think, "Oh, weak link," or "Oh, you know, not a starter." A lot of people can be interchanged and think, "Oh, yeah, still a good team." I wonder if it's that culture of using so like the wider squad, which actually strengthens you so much more.
I'd say it's probably, but all fundamentally comes down to Rob and the other coaches because they've recruit a squad that are strong across the board, so you don't feel that it's everyone you feel you're going to bring in is a decent, you know, maybe even sort of, you know, for some situations better than another player. But I think that the buck probably starts and ends with the coaches there and the squad they've built.
So how on earth did they go about finding you then? Because I mean, I'd like to talk about Jersey later because I think it's a really interesting club. But I mean,
it's not about Danny's situation, is it, over there?
No, it's definitely not that.
Just give that one a buff.
Yeah, because like, it's not the natural place to go and, you know, hunt your next prop.
Well, yeah, when I went there, it was because Steve Bowden was there.
Okay.
And he basically phoned me up because he was sort of interested, because I'd been there with Nottingham, and he said he thought that I could go well there, and they have notoriously had they've sent on a lot of front row from there, so there's been like me,
Petrus Duplessis, was he there?
Barrington, no, Petrus Duplessis was there. It's me, Barrington, Elvis, Sam Lockwood plays for Newcastle, Jake Walmore, Jake Armstrong, two props just signed for Bristol. If there's anyone, I'm not sure. They've had a lot of turnover in there, but from my experience when I was there, it's because Steve was put so much emphasis on it. I'm not sure what the new Fords coach is like, whether he's the same as Steve, who's now at Leeds.
Mm.
But when I was there, there was a massive emphasis on it, and there was pressure. You know, there was pressure on you to go forward and to get scrum penalties and stuff like that. And it does stand you in good stead because it was very cut and dry with Steve. It's like, you know, you either go forward and you've had a good game or you get shoveled and you've had a shit game.
Interesting.
So, yeah, but no, he really, really helped me. Steve Bowden, when I was there, really helped me.
And he's the guy that put you in touch with Exeter?
No, he didn't put me in touch with Exeter. Rob basically contacted me. I was around February time, he contacted me and I went over and did the medical and the physical battery of tests, and then they offered me a contract shortly after.
So what is, because I always hear from Exeter players that, you know, Rob Baxter has a process, and the process basically is a sit down and the chat. Was that kind of your experience? Was it a bit different to that?
Yeah, I think every new player who gets signed who comes in had to go through the same thing. So you basically go into the club, you look around the club, you get like a physical from Jamie, the head physio. Then you go like through a battery of tests with the S&C, and then you speak with. So if you're a back, you speak with Ali Heifer and Rob. And if you're a forward, you speak with Rob Hunter and Rob Baxter. And they speak to me for about an hour and a half, I think, just about like with my background and why I played, and then about my actually where they thought I could improve and what they thought I did well. And then he showed me like a load of clips that he'd seen of me, and they were
really
like from like the last 10 games, and I was like, Christ, like, was he really, really, like, so much research had got into it. And I was like, I was a bit like a little bit taken aback, to be fair.
Do you find that quite flattering? I mean, I think I'd find that very, very flattering.
I found it flattering. I didn't believe it was going to be that extensive. I was just sort of thought he was going to be like, oh yeah, I think you're right, and maybe you could sort of come here. But it was like serious research. But then if you look at the success that Exeter have had with other championship players, and you know, you need to put it down to the coaches again, because they're the ones that are doing all the research, maybe, which other coaches aren't doing.
Yeah. I mean, people say, and I have heard this many times, you know, it's a sit down, it's a chat with Rob Baxter. He likes to pick the character over the person. But I do think there's actually a lot more science behind the scenes than Exeter ever really let on, to be fair.
Yeah, well, I think the thing about Acer and what I quite like about it is it's quite, because there's such a low turnover of players that you sort of, it's kind of a thing, we're sort of just down on our own, and we're just down, we're quite isolated, I'd say we're the most isolated Premiership team, we're sort of a bit out of the way, and we just sort of go about our business doing our own thing, and I quite like it like that. It's not like we're sort of the, you know, I do think, sorry, just go back to the low turnover of players is what is the main contributor towards that.
How do you measure your success as a player? How, when you come off a field, how do you say, yeah, I've had a good, you know, what makes you think I've had a good game today?
I think I'm pretty pragmatic with it. Like, I don't try and be too hard on myself, and I don't try and like kind of go over the top either. Like, it's just, I think to be fair, like, you know, I think everyone knows, they know if they're a good game or not, and it's pretty for a front row. It's pretty easy. You've done well in the scrum, you've done well otherwise in set pieces of the mall and that, and you've, you know, made a few big tackles and cleared some people out. It's pretty simple though. I think people know, but a lot of the time players probably don't want to let on that they didn't have a bad game, or they're sort of unbelievably hard on themselves, so they never had a good game. So it's a bit like, I think you need to kind of probably find a bit of a balance between the two, and just be honest with yourself, really. I don't know, there's no real method to it. I just think I know.
Yeah.
Whether I have or whether I haven't.
Well, there was an old interview I listened to with Johnny Wilkinson years and years and years ago, and the interviewer said, well, you know, how do you rate yourself? And he goes, six. I was like, oh, six? And like, his whole thing always was, yeah, six, because I know I'm better than average, but there's so much more to work on. I was like, oh, right, okay. So that's probably why I never got past level seven.
Yeah, but I don't know, that guy's just a different animal, isn't he, really? Wilkinson. Like, he's just unbelievably committed and stuff like that. I would find it difficult to be that committed, I think. I love the game and that kind of stuff, but I would find the monotony, I'd probably find a little bit hard.
Yeah. It would be pretty, it'd be pretty difficult to be that obsessed by one thing.
Well, I think if you're that way inclined, it's like the labour of love. It's like you're doing something you love, so it's not hard, it's easy. Do you know what I mean? But while I love the game, I couldn't ever wholly give myself over to it, like 100% consumed by it.
Well, it's interesting.
Sorry,
I shouldn't have interrupted there. Yeah, I was going to say, it's interesting, you know, because the RFU, I don't mean at the professional level, like, you know, all the pathways and stuff, although there might be some element of it. But the RFU, when they're talking to coaches, because I coach locally, the general feeling is that you want rugby players with other outside interests and other sporting backgrounds and go out and go and experience things and become more well-rounded players, because more well-rounded players that played other sports turn into better rugby players later on in life. And I don't know if I buy that, the whole, you know, be a well-rounded individual, you'll become a good rugby player. I kind of think you need to concentrate on rugby. I'm not sure which way it kind of falls, really.
Yeah, and I think people, which is one of those things that sort of like, people love the idea of it, and they're a guy who was a county level cricketer and played goalie for Everton or something like that, you know, yeah. Everton Academy. It's like, really, I think it's just down to the individual. You know, when I was a kid, I only really ever wanted to play rugby. I didn't want to do rugby and then athletics or anything like that. I wasn't particularly athletic, so I wasn't very good anyway. But it was like, I just wanted to play rugby the whole time. If the kid wants to play other things, and let him do other things. It's not like, they're trying to shoehorn this idea of having this like well-rounded individual athlete as like, that'll be the, you know, that this is what we need. Or the other thing with that is, oh, we need like rugby league players, because rugby league's like this and this. And it's like, well, if he's a good rugby union player, then yeah, but if not, then
yeah, that's a good point.
Why are you trying to just like, why are they automatically better than us?
Well, I wonder if people have started to learn their lesson a bit now, because the two sports, I mean, I do follow rugby league a little bit, and you know, I do know that when rugby league teams and rugby union teams at the highest level train together, as they sometimes do, the rugby league boys are astonished by the size of the rugby union lads now. I mean, they're just not... I don't even think they're comparable sports now outside of very few positions. Maybe... Yeah. Not even wing. Maybe, like, halfback or something, or fullback. But I mean, they're completely different. Look at Sam Burgess. He should have been, on paper, a roaring success. Just didn't work out for him. And he's probably the best rugby league player of this generation. Well, he's amazing.
But yeah, I think that he... what he left pretty... He didn't get that much of a fair crack at it. And he got, a year play, and then he went back to play rugby, which I personally think was probably the right decision for him. I don't know the fella, and I can't speak for him, but I think that you would say that was probably the right thing, because why would you stay doing something that you're sort of maybe not taking to that quickly? You've already played in a World Cup, which for most people is like a dream, or for, you'd say for pretty much any professional rugby player's a dream. And then you've got this sort of really cushy billet back playing rugby league, a sport which you know you're class at. I'd have been straight back.
Yeah, I mean, it does break both ways. I mean, I don't think he was ever a particularly good rugby union player, although I think he could have been good given more time. But there again, I don't think there's anyone in the world of rugby union that could go over to rugby league and do half of what he's done. They're just different beasts.
I think they are, but no one... The channel... It's not really two-way traffic. It's in league players come over to play union. There's no one really jumping out to go and play union who sort of try and play a league. It just doesn't really happen. Maybe it's because they were meaningful. Maybe it's just because there isn't that much interest.
It's the money. It's the money, I think, because I tell you the other thing which is really interesting is the amount of talent, like the residual talent which is left from the North that should be playing rugby league, which is now playing rugby union. I mean, Farrell came from Wigan. Eastmond, Ford, both the Fords, Mike Ford. You know, that's almost like the whole England playmaking access there.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm not really sort of too sure what their sort of story of coming over was and all that kind of thing, like why they ended up playing union or anything like that.
Yeah. But I think it's just an interesting thing of like, you know, this talent, I mean, that talent, I guess, you know, with slightly different economic circumstances or, you know, if that game had been a little bit more successful than it is, they probably would have stayed there. So, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, it is what it is.
Well, I've left my toughest questions for last, if you don't mind.
Please continue.
Please continue, of course. Do you get your hair cut by the Exeter barber?
I do get my haircut by the Exeter barber.
I actually tried to interview him, and he wouldn't...
Did you?
Yes, I did, actually. And he wouldn't come on in case he upset the boys.
What do you mean? Why would he upset the boys?
Well...
You've got his real name, the Exeter barber.
I have got... I don't have it off the top of my head, but we follow each other on Twitter. I'm going to tell you now. It's a little bit awkward to say this, but... we might have been mocking some of the haircuts at Exeter because it is an eclectic range. Not everyone's got your flowing locks, but we did.
Yeah.
We might have mocked some of the hair, and then he got in contact with us on Twitter. So anyway, we're now friends. And
was it an abusive message?
No, not at all. But just a little thing like.
Who are you mocking? You're mocking mine, I assume.
I would never mock a man who's got the same hair as Triple H. I just wouldn't do that.
Yeah, he's actually shaved his hair now. Hans Herms Helmsley. Yeah. No, the thing I find a bit, I said to because I was sort of chatting to him about it, and he was sort of, and I said, I honestly don't think it's a bad thing. I think it is like, any publicity is good publicity.
Yeah.
But I think that it's funny because people always give the abuse, like, there's always like, every team, if a few lads with a few dodgy barnets, everyone's like, oh, they're barber. As if the team has one barber who does the whole stream. It's like, obviously people just think it's just like a phrase you use because no team has one barber. But Exeter actually do have one who does everyone's hair.
Yeah.
I'm saying, so people think it's just like a conceptual person, but no, this person actually exists.
Yeah, no.
And he works, and you know, and he does do everyone's hair, and a fine job he does too.
Yeah, well, he does an eclectic job. He's got a lot of range.
Well, who's you not sort of that eclectic?
Who were we talking about at the time? I think it might have been Luke Cowan-Dickey.
I've had a mullet now for about 5 years or something.
It just shows how long ago it was.
It was a long-standing success of the show. It's been going on for so long.
Exactly right. And the other thing, actually, Luke Cowan-Dickey related, is you don't disappoint me now, but you're not one of these rugby players that likes rugby but loves Fortnite.
Oh, no, I play it, but not very well. My housemates are actually downstairs playing it right now. I don't think there's no, it just doesn't, I do enjoy it, but I don't get addicted to the games. Like, I see it for what it is, a bit of fun. It's not, for me, it's not like a way of life or a religion or anything like that, which I think it is fast becoming for some people.
Oh, for some of the lads, we've spoke today about UFC and cycling and all sorts of things, your last chance, all the sort of things which I imagine the professional rugby players are into. And do you know what? More and more, when I ask the question, what do you do with your spare time? It's Fortnite.
But it is fun.
It is fun. Of course it's fun. Of course it's fun. But it's just one of those things. Like, it's a generational thing. I'm getting old now. I'm 34. So, one of those things.
It is. But have you ever given it a proper try?
Do you know, I haven't. And the reason I haven't is because, it's not because I don't have enough time. I could fit it in somewhere, right? I'm scared that it's going to be too much fun, and I'm sure it will be too much fun. But then what? What do I have to give up?
Exactly. Which piece of the pie needs to be sacrificed in order to make time for Fortnite?
Yeah, I mean,
I say about Fortnite is I'm a casual player. Like, I flirt in and out of it. But the thing is, I play it because I like going in a squad with the lads and having like a laugh. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
And I know the majority of the squads I'm with, I'm a burden, a real burden.
Well, I guess, I think the test of has it gone too far is if you go around to your mate's house carrying a flat screen TV and an Xbox. I think that's when it's gone too far.
Yeah, I never. I think households should have one PlayStation.
Yeah.
When you start having three PlayStations in three different rooms, I think I'm not for that at all.
Who are your housemates? Are they Exeter players?
Yeah, Alec Hepburn and James Freeman.
Oh, strong house that.
Yeah, it's good, mate. We have a good laugh.
Solid, right, mate? Well, thank you so much for your time. We've been chatting for an hour and a half.
Well, thanks for having me, mate. That was really enjoyable. Cheers.
Excellent. Before you go, let's loop it right back to the start. Where can we find you on social media?
At HarryWilliams91 Twitter. That's all.
Fantastic. Right, mate. Well, best of luck with the season, and we're gonna have to catch up at some point in the 18-19. Premiership season, and with you hopefully off to the World Cup as well.
Wicked. Cheers, mate.
Cheers, buddy.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.